Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week, I'm joined by Ira Wolf, President and Chief Googleization Officer at Success Performance Solutions. Ira, welcome to Digital Transformation and Leadership.
Hey, thanks very much, Danny. Pleasure to meet and pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to do this across time zones. It's always good when I can talk to someone in the US and I'm here in Singapore, so I'm a day ahead of you.
The world we live in, right?
It is, and with the work from home, it's always good when the kids are at school to do these things. So before we start, Ira, could you quickly introduce yourself and what it is you're doing for the listeners?
Absolutely. Well, my name's Ira Wolf. For the last 26 years, or 26 years ago, I started this business. It's called Success Performance Solutions. Mm-hmm. We primarily work small, medium-sized companies, help them hire smarter, recruit faster. And most people know me as the millennial trapped in the baby boomer body.
So. I'm a millennial trapped in a millennial's body.
Baby boomer's getting a little creaky.
Okay. And you call yourself the world's first chief Googleization officer. What does that mean?
Well, that's what it means. I guess when you come up with the term, you can, and you own the company, you can call yourself whatever you want.
You can.
It sort of reflects who I am, yeah. What I do, what I'm passionate about. I mean, you ask, you know, ultimately, as I said, we help companies hire smarter, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. It's beyond that. We talk about the future of work. Going back, my current book is Recruiting in the Age of Googleization, but okay. My prior book was Geeks, Geezers, and Googleization. Mm-hmm. Good alliteration, which eventually that became the title of my podcast.
Okay.
But going back almost 15 years ago, the topic that everybody was focused on was those darn millennials, you guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you were blamed for everything. You know, anything that was wrong, you were blamed for. Millennials mm-hmm. were blamed. And I started to write, there was so much confusion about it, and I was doing a lot of writing about the future jobs and, you know, the millennial generation, and although mm-hmm. I really dislike stereotyping, but the generation was large. I mean, you were the largest generation to date, yeah. And in the U.S. there was about 80 million millennials. Mm-hmm. And so certainly just by pure numbers, you were going to change the world, good, bad, or indifferent, you were going to change it. But I looked beyond that, and we talked about the baby boomers were aging and Gen X, you know, which was the prior generation that was blamed for everything. Mm-hmm. And then the millennials, and there were still a lot of people, you know, in the 70s and 80s that were still working. So you had all these generations in the workplace. But the one thing that people missed yeah. was technology. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't only that there was new technology, the internet, you know, in the early 2000s was getting to be pretty commonplace, and mobile phones were just starting to become commonplace. But Googleization was really the convergence of what I called the wired and the tired. Mm-hmm. There was the multi-generations, not necessarily by chronological age, but people who were adopting the new ways and then people who were resisting the new ways. And then technology was just changing rapidly, you know, good old Moore's Law, you know, that the technologies were doubling every year and a half.
Yeah.
And I came up with this alliteration, you know, the original name of the book was, it was going to be Geek, Skeezers, and Technology. Then it was going to be the Tired, the Wired, and Technology. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't know where I came up with it, but I came up with Googleization. And Google was starting to become more than a search engine. And it stuck.
Yeah.
And a couple of people started calling me the Googleization guy. So when I came up with the new book, I was writing about the future of work. It was going to have nothing to do with recruiting. It was just going mm-hmm. to be, this is the world we're going to live in. Here's how fast the world is going to change. You know, what is our life going to be? And what's work going to be? It wasn't mm-hmm. about recruiting. But it was about jobs and work. What are our careers going to look like when it's impacted by artificial intelligence, machine learning, but also mm-hmm. 3D printing and biogenetics, you name it. It was, what's all this new advanced technology going to look like? So I kept the theme, And it was going to be the, you know, welcome to the age of Googleization. And, you know, one thing led to another. And it became, well, why don't I talk about something that people were struggling with? And it was, okay, let's talk about recruiting in the age of Googleization. Mm-hmm. But so the Googleization theme just stuck.
Yeah.
People started calling me the Googleization guy. And I, you know, as the owner of the business, I said, no, I'm the chief Googleization officer. So long way around there. But that sort of, you know, explains what Googleization is.
Yeah.
And also, you know, how I adopted the title. And I apparently I am the only one. Nobody's claimed differently.
So. I like it. It's always good to be unique and very sticky, like you mentioned. Thanks for unpacking that. So we're going to talk today about the perfect labor storm has arrived and now what? And it'd be good if you could kind of talk the listeners and me through what is the perfect labor storm and what does it have to do with Googleization?
Well, you'll get the trend here that you tend to come up with stories, things that stick. Because, you know, it's how do you brand yourself? How do you get people's attention? And going back, you were, you know, just coming into the workforce or maybe even in school at that time. But in the late 90s, there was a similar situation. There was a labor shortage.
I'm an older millennial, by the way, 85. Yeah.
You were still in school. So in the late 90s, you weren't in the workforce
not yet.
But there was a labor shortage and the same conversations that we're having now. That schools weren't educating properly, that people had job openings. There were record numbers of job openings. And at that time, because of the dot-com boom, we were creating hundreds. And again, I know the U.S. numbers better than anywhere else, but worldwide, we were creating a lot of new jobs. So because we couldn't hire people in the U.S., they were exporting. You know, they were going overseas. They were outsourcing a lot of the work. Mm-hmm. And the perfect labor storm. I was talking about people blamed everything. They blamed the millennials, you know, and you weren't even in the workforce, but they blamed the millennials for the labor shortages, those lazy kids. At that point, they were blaming Gen X, poor work attitude. But, you know, demographics wasn't on the side. At that point, Gen X was the incoming workforce, and Gen X was half the size of baby boomers. There was only about 40 million U.S. Gen X, and just for reference, Gen X was 1965 to 1980. Mm-hmm. So at that point, they were the young people coming into the workforce, and there was only half of as many as there were baby boomers. So all these jobs are being created, and there just wasn't a volume. Mm-hmm. But the baby boomers were getting older, and they were retiring. Women reached their peak, the highest number of women in the workplace. And was happening during that time. Women also were becoming the more educated gender, which was the first time in history. The internet was just coming into being. There was globalization. Technology was advancing. There was a whole slew of things, and they were all converging at the same time. You couldn't fix one, because if you just focused your eyes on the millennials, technology was going on. If you just focused on technology, there was still shifting demographics. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I was sitting in a movie, and if you remember the movie The Perfect Storm, the analogy, the story that it told was certainly, you know, it was a fun movie. But the story that was told was that there were three incidental, just average storm, everyday storms. We talked about a thunderstorm moving through both our areas, when we were recording. And there were three storms, a low pressure system, and two high pressure systems. And if any one of those moved through a particular area at any time, nothing would have happened. It would just been another event. But they all converged simultaneously, and they created these massive tidal waves, this massive disruption of weather. And I'm sitting in the movie thinking, wow, that's exactly what happened, that was happening in our workforce. There's this convergence of, as I said, demographic, socioeconomic changes, technology. And I that, wow, this is the perfect labor storm. Mm-hmm. And it stuck. And it was right before a big keynote that I was giving to a chamber of commerce for their workforce development. And they had a workforce summit because, similar to what we're experiencing now, there was a shortage of people. Yep. People had a lot of openings. So I was the keynote talking about the perfect labor storm. And it stuck with me. So after that, I wrote a book, and then I wrote a second version of the book. And then I sort of put it to rest because I thought everybody knew it. You know, McKinsey, mm-hmm. Deloitte, Boston Consulting Group, I mean, Gallup, I mean, everybody talked about, not necessarily a perfect labor storm, but they talked about the same thing happening. Go, who doesn't know about this yet? In 2021, we found out, you know, the perfect labor storm pretty much arrived. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in 2021, but at the beginning of this year, as people came out, countries came out of the lockdowns and the quarantines and mm-hmm. started to get back. I won't say go back to normal, but got back to business. Yeah. And there's just extreme shortages. So what we were talking about, and I say we, there's a lot of people that were talking about it. Mm-hmm. But the perfect labor storm 21 years ago, when I coined that phrase, said this is what it's going to look like in 20 to 30 years. And here we are at 21 years out. And I picked up the book just the other day to look up something, and it's like, wow, there's a lot of things that came true. Mm-hmm. You know? So we warned you. You know, anybody who's struggling right now hiring people, there were a lot of warning signs, and it's not going to be an easy fix. But we are, you know, we have this perfect labor storm, and then on top of that, we have this accelerating trend of technology. Mm. And so, you know, even adapting now, we need to teach our kids different, and we need to reskill and upskill our workforce. Well, we need to do it quickly. We can't, like, over the next 5 to 10 years, this is what we need to do. Mm-hmm. We need to do it now, because if we don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. And again, I'm speaking mm-hmm. from a U.S. perspective. You obviously have an Asian influence. Mm-hmm. So China is huge. I mean, it impacts our world. But we're competing with other countries that are advanced, you know, are basically advanced. Their people are advancing faster than we are in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it's tough to turn a big ship on a dime, but mm-hmm. we need to do it.
Do you think, Ira, I love the way you unpacked all of that. Thank you. Do you think that within certain jobs, things like, say, digital marketing or programming, there's still quite a high barrier to entry? So maybe people that have high potential but maybe don't already have some of the basic skills, or maybe being stopped from going into some of these jobs or working for certain types of companies, or you talked about reskilling, maybe reskilling people to do these kind of things?
Well, yes, certainly. I mean, there's certainly every job. Yeah. I mean, I would say almost every single job has a higher skill level. Mm. You know, even to get paid. I mean, before mm-hmm. People can get cash or they'd get their checks, and now the companies, especially with the remote, you know, nature of work, companies still had to pay people. So everything became direct deposited. And mm-hmm. it's just amazing, people that don't understand how to do that. You know, even for a worker to be able to go out as technology, as our everyday behaviors changed. Mm-hmm. How do you pay for something? Well, people weren't accepting cash. Went to a cashless society. In order to pay for things, you need to have a smartphone. Mm-hmm. and have the apps. Still amazing. People don't know how to, you know, people still want to keep their flip phone. Mm-hmm. And so they have to find places that still deal with cash when you want to do that. And there's certainly a lot of, you know, I know in the U.S. and especially in more rural areas, there's a lot of places that you can do that, but they're becoming less and less because the cost of doing business is just too much to pay. And now that you have labor shortages, so much more is being automated. To check out from a grocery store, oftentimes there's no help. You need that to basically go to a concert. You need to be able to carry a smartphone and download your the ticket mm-hmm. on there to pay for things. Mm-hmm. So everybody is going to have those skills. So it doesn't matter mm-hmm. if you're a landscaper or a maintenance person. you know, or certified a nurse assistant, or, you know, you're in high tech. I mean, everybody is going to need those skills. So there's the minimum education that you need, the minimal skill set that you need is has just been raised. But there, you know, there the estimate is that two-thirds of all jobs will be at least one-third automated. And what people don't understand about that is that that does not mean that you can get 40 hours of work done in 25 hours, you know. What it means is that you can, for those 20, to get that 40-hour week or whatever the work week is, you're going to need advanced skills. Everybody's going to need to learn new skills. And there's a lot of people that don't have that. In the U.S. alone, it's estimated that there is going to be, by 2030, 128 million skilled, medium to high skilled jobs. And there's, at the current rate, there's only 56 million people that will be qualified to do that. So again, it's a huge, huge gap. There's certainly going to be room for lower skilled jobs, but they, the majority, the number of people who are going to qualify those is going to be massive. So there's, you know, there's societal problems associated with that as well. But we, there's just the skills gap. I mean, there's in the U.S. now, there's one job for every person looking for a job. But we can't fill the jobs because the jobs that are available require higher skills, as you said. So there are barriers of entry that you need a minimum skills. You also can't take somebody who used to work on a line, maybe a mechanic, or in retail, and they need reskilling and upskilling and training and education to become a nurse, to go into healthcare. They need that to go into computer services, whether it's programming or tech or maintenance. So there's just a lot. There's a lot of people that just don't have the skills for the jobs that are available, and it didn't happen overnight. But the pandemic certainly accelerated it.
Yeah, and whose responsibility does it fall on to fill this gap? Is it public sector, community colleges? Who should be the ones that are stepping in to help fill the gap between the, you mentioned 128 million kind of skilled jobs and only kind of 56 million people to fill them? How what do you do?
Everybody. I work with a gentleman, Ed Gordon. When I say work with him, we collaborate, and he's been doing this for, he's a labor economist, he's a social scientist, labor economist, he's been doing this for 50 years. He's written 20 some books. And he's publishing a new book. I've interviewed him a monthly. We have a live stream called the Gordon, it's the Gordon Report, and he updates us, you know, what's happening. And he's been working with workforce development, and his, and again, I know the U.S. numbers better than any. In the U.S., an aggressive plan to upskill and reskill 30 million workers, and then also update education, the curriculum, and direct people into the jobs that are going to be, you know, what are these new jobs? That's 40 million people, 30 million of upskilling, reskilling of current workers, 10 million educated new workers. But that's still only 96 million people. And then, so there's 32 million, you know, there's 34 million jobs that are going to be available. And some of those jobs will be automated and we'll get rid of the jobs. But that also means there's going to be a lot of people that aren't employed. So that becomes, you know, now that becomes a government problem. So the answer is that we need to address how do we support the people? Who funds it? Where does the funding come from? How there's been a misalignment on what secondary education colleges and universities, you know, do we need all these people coming out with MBAs? When we have shortages and, you know, we don't need more hospital administrators. You need more people to provide the care, providers, and you need more technicians. And with more technology, you need people to repair those. Not everybody needs a four-year degree. Everybody needs continuous education, but not everybody needs a college or a university degree. So it's, you know, education has to adapt. Parents have to adapt. Mm-hmm. You know, it's parents' responsibility not only to make sure their kids are educated, but to guide them. And again, not everybody needs a college or university degree. Not everybody needs a graduate degree. Mm-hmm. You need to be educated, though. But public sector, private sector, and there are some really, really successful collaborations. Mm-hmm. Ed Gordon talks about, he calls them retains, which are regional, they're regional initiatives.
Okay.
And they're regional networks. And they're successful. And I've been involved with a few of those in a couple of the areas that I've lived over the last few years. But they're really, you know, there's a lot of politics, there's a lot of bureaucracy. The questions you're asking, whose responsibility is it? Mm-hmm. And everybody tends to point the finger at the other, you know, it's the parents, it's the schools, no, it's the government, no, it's industry. And, you know, it's very disruptive, and it's coming, you know, the time, as I said, the perfect thing, the perfect labor storm arrived.
Mm-hmm. And what happens if we don't fill that gap? What can companies do? How will they fill these positions? Will it be more reliance on automation, like you mentioned? Will they cope?
It's really terrifying. Mm. Because we talk about, you know, for anybody who wants to connect with me, I'm very active on LinkedIn, and you know, my tagline up there is I'm terrified, fascinated, and terrified by exponential change. And it's true. So I'm fascinated by, you know, especially the quality of life that we can have and medicine. I mean, you know, when you think about even the vaccine that you know, within less than 12 months, a vaccine was developed, but it wasn't done in traditional ways through live viruses. It was a manufactured gene. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a manufactured vaccine. So, you know, thank goodness for technology. But somebody, that's going to continue. We're not going to slow down technology. But it does mean that there's going to be a lot of people that are displaced, a lot of people left behind, a lot of people that need, you know, to be reskilled. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen, because it can't happen overnight. Which also means that there's going to be a lot of civil unrest. You know, just look at, you know, the U.S., what's going on now. I mean, it's going on in a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. But in the U.S., there is a huge divide. And, you know, some of it's related to poverty, some of it's related to race, and some of that's just because a lot of the minorities, people of color, were held back. Mm-hmm. They had their place. Their jobs are being eliminated because those were a lot of the manual jobs or the low-skilled jobs. So there's going to be a lot of social unrest. Which is the terrifying part. The terrifying part for me, there's certainly ethical decisions when you talk about, you know, artificial intelligence and some of these other technologies, and you know, or just developing, you know, the types of weapons that people could develop using this technology. So a lot of that in its own right can be terrifying, but you at least hope that there's going to be enough ethics and enough guidelines that people will control that. But on the other side, what happens to be really terrifying is, if it's left unchecked and people don't consider what the social implications and the public implications of that are, you know, there's going to be at minimal unrest, and that mm-hmm. may be kind.
Yeah.
An underestimate.
Yeah. Now is the time, isn't it, to kind of get a handle on this and try and make some of those big changes like you mentioned. I guess, and when it comes to companies, Ira, is there anything you see that companies could do, or any mistakes that you see companies making when it comes to recruiting workers or trying to find the right talent?
Yeah, how many segments is this show?
Just a part one today.
Yeah. So what are the mistakes that companies do? I mean, one is looking outside, looking to someone else to fix the problem. I think that's the biggest. And again, doesn't mean they have to fix it alone, but there's going to have to be collaborations, and maybe even with other, you know, with competitors, how to do that. And it's not against one industry against the other. You know, I know I was involved with workforce development about 15, more than that, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it became, there was a limited amount of people, and then the industry started to go to war with one another. That, you know, this can't, the region couldn't survive without the hospitality. We need more hospitality workers. Mm-hmm. And other ones said, but that's not the future. We need more advanced manufacturing. And then what about distribution? What about healthcare? So, you know, it gets down to it that everybody buys into reskilling and upskilling until people lean toward another industry. Mm-hmm. And then, well, I don't want to be part of it. I'm not going to fund that. But, you know, ultimately, it is rising water lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to have to be much more collaboration. So one is private companies and public companies are going to have to take the responsibility to do that on their own. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to have their own education systems, but they have to at least influence and work closely, whether it's public or private schools, to be able to do that. But then there's going to be upskilling and reskilling. What does that look like? But things like apprenticeships, there's a lot of companies that got away from that. Apprenticeships are going to be good. I mean, companies going into schools, letting kids is in elementary school know mm-hmm. what other opportunities are. I never saw that. You basically had two choices. You were going to go to the trades, or work in a factory, or you went to college. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things in between there, but there's a lot of apprenticeships. Apprenticeships could be available for anybody from technology to, you know, to manufacturing. So companies mm-hmm. are going to have to identify, they're going to have to do a better job of measuring what gaps are there, what business, not only what business are they in today, but what business are they going to be in tomorrow and 5 years from now? And what skill gaps, you know, what skills are they going to need and where are they? I continually hear this, and it drives me mm-hmm. crazy. You talk about mistakes. I get calls from clients every day. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, you know, that's our business. And new clients, and they say, listen, we're really small, and small isn't an excuse. It doesn't matter. You're not exempt from change in the labor markets if you're mm-hmm. small. But people say we're really small, and we don't experience much turnover, which is good not to experience much turnover. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of companies that have had the same employees for 30 and 40 years, and they don't know how to hire. They don't know how to recruit in today's market, because the good news is people came to work with them, you know, whether it was right out of high school or right out of college, and stayed with them. And again, especially in smaller mid-sized businesses, especially if they were privately owned or nonprofit, people stayed. But now all those people that are getting ready to retire or move on, or they're not capable. If it's a physical job, they're not capable of doing the work as much as they could. So they need younger people. So a lot of companies that have thrived on low turnover mm-hmm. and minimal hiring are really in trouble, because now they don't know how to hire. So companies really need to go out and say where, and I talk about this in my book. I actually have a questionnaire there, is how many people, you know, what's the age, what's the demographics of your workforce? Mm-hmm. What percentage of your people are, you know, between 50 and 60 or 60 and 70? And who's going to likely leave the company? And then you need to look at leadership, you know, who's within the company that you can develop for those leadership roles. And then where are you going to get new employees? You know, how are you going to attract? And you can't do it overnight. You can't wait till somebody retires or quits. Mm-hmm. To start a recruitment strategy these days, there's, because you don't have a presence. If no one's ever heard of you before, if you look up, you know, if you post a job mm-hmm. and you don't know how to do, you talked about digital marketing. I mean, recruitment's digital marketing. Mm-hmm. There's no two ways about it. You have to be pretty savvy, and a lot of companies aren't. But even if you were and you posted out there, but you don't have a brand, people go up and they try to get a rating. What's it like to work for that company? And you haven't hired a lot of people in the past and nobody's rated you, then when people have choices, people don't have to take chances on you. You know, why doesn't this company have ratings? They've been around for 40 years.
Yeah.
So there's, yeah, it's complicated. It's not complicated. It's complex. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of moving parts to it. So I would suggest to every company, I mean, it's one is you have an immediate need and you have a longer term need. And the immediate need is what do you need to do differently to attract the workers to bring them in and keep them, you know, and keep the doors open and the lights on. Mm-hmm. And then, but you need to look at 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's not 10 years anymore. It's 3 to 5 years because again, you know, at least from everything I've read, you know, at least here in Europe, and I assume it's the same, Singapore and a lot of other well and developed countries. Mm-hmm. You know, they're talking about the Great Resignation. You know, this is getting back to business. Is people have said, you know, I sort of like this remote thing. I don't want to go back to the office. I don't want to have to commute. People moved away. And other people just said, I want a better lifestyle. So mm-hmm. there's the highest quit rate in history is occurring right now in the U.S.
Okay.
There's more people quitting their jobs. There's as many people quitting their jobs as there are being hired. And so there's it's sort of a flywheel out mm-hmm. that's spinning out of control. And so companies need to wise up and become a little bit better at doing that. So I think the biggest mistake that the number one mistake that I see companies make is they're just not recognizing that we're living in a different world, and mm-hmm. this isn't a blip, and it's not going to go away, and you know, overnight. And there's no quick fixes. So I take the bull by the horns and start to figure out how you're going to, one is treat people better, but how are you going to upskill, reskill, train, educate, and recruit better?
Mm-hmm. And do you think companies should always be recruiting? Should there be someone in the company that's always just talking to talent in the industry, to younger talent, going in and looking in schools, like you mentioned, for apprenticeships? Should that just be a continuous process so that you've always got a pool of people coming through or top talent even on the bench that maybe is ready to come in if someone does decide to go?
You know, as you were asking that question, I'm thinking of going back to collaborations.
Yeah.
And the answer is, unless you're a Google or an Apple that everybody wants to, you know, the top talent wants to work for, then you need to continually be recruiting. But if you know, if you're small and you don't have a lot of turnover, then that's you know, that's time, money, and resources spent in you know, that you probably don't need to be spending. Mm-hmm. But because this is going to take a collaboration. I mean, if you want to attract people to your area, if you want young people or workers to be developed, you're going to have to work with your competitors to create a kind of a community talent pool. Mm-hmm. And I read a really interesting idea of what companies need to do is that, you know, what happens is when you recruit, let's say you have an opening and say you're fortunate enough to have 50 applications. Yep. But you only hire one person. So I talk a lot about candidate experiences. So you need to treat the 49 who aren't hired mm-hmm. well. You just can't ignore them. You can't send them a text message. You weren't hired. Mm-hmm. You can't just ignore them completely. So there's only that one person that's hired. But within that 49, there might have been a number of other people that were good fits, not for your company, but mm-hmm. maybe for another company. So the idea was, and I think it was a company that was creating the software for this, a startup, is what do you do with all the people that you rejected, but were quality people? They had skills. They just weren't, you know, your first choice, or they didn't fit your culture, but they mm-hmm. fit somewhere else. Mm-hmm. What about working with your competitors or even your non-competitors, you know, people in other industry to direct those people toward there? So you became almost a internal staffing agency.
Yeah.
That you have a pool of talent, and rather than we hired this month and we had 50 people, and then 9 months later there's another opening and you start the wheel over again. Mm-hmm. What if you could reach into your competitor, you know, or another business, another collaborative? And there was a pool of people there that that you would be able to tap into for an opening. What if there's people that want gig work or part-time work or remote work, and they're a good employee, but you can they want to work remote, so they can work anywhere. Somebody else may have that employee, when, or you may be in healthcare and need people that are direct. Well, again, somebody else may have that. So it's going to take really creative solutions how to redistribute the talent. I mean, so there's talent out there. I mean, that's the other argument, that we really don't have a people shortage of labor, that the talent's there. It's just not distributed in the right places.
And Ira, you mentioned as well, so you've got this talent pool there that have applied. You've got, say, 50 people that have applied. There's only one job. And for companies, unfortunately, companies sometimes will hire the wrong person. It's just inevitable. Maybe you like the person, you bring them in, and actually there was someone within that pool that had the right skills or was better suited for the job. Companies talk a lot about hiring for culture fit or making sure their values mirror the company values. Is there anything you recommend companies do just to make sure they do bring in the right person? Because again, bringing in the wrong person, investing all that time in onboarding and training and getting them to do the job, if it isn't a fit, it's a very costly thing. Are there any recommendations you have there for the listeners?
It sounds like a setup, Danny. That's what I do. But no, my business, 90-some percent of where we spend our time is on assessments.
Okay.
Pre-hire assessments or leadership assessments.
Yeah.
I mean, we test everything from, does, you know, the person says they can type and do data entry and knows how to use Excel. Do they really? I mean, so you can easily test it. But where it gets a little bit more challenging is certainly we look at a three-way fit. One is, do they have the skills to do the job? And companies are pretty good at doing that, the technical skills, the functional skills. They're pretty good at assessing that. And if not, they can be easily trained. Where people break down is more on behavior and attitudes. So we test for personality, we test for attitudes such as, are they reliable and responsible and dedicated? One of the things that we've recently started to do, because there is an interest, but it's also, again, because people have to change and adapt, and it's beyond just being flexible, is, are they adaptable? So we're now we now can help companies measure grit, which is perseverance. Can people keep going? But resilience, you know, two buzzwords that became pretty popular last year. Can you endure and can you bounce back? But that's not enough. If you're knocked down, you get up, and you know, grit means you keep going. But you got to have some direction. And sometimes if you keep going the same way you used to, you know, you keep making the same mistake over and over again. It's, as Einstein said, it's insanity. So you need mental flexibility. Mental flexibility is, how do you make sense of all of contradictory ideas? Again, raging debate in the U.S. right now is vaccines or no vaccines. How do you need people that have the ability to process that. And I'm not advocating the vaccine or no vaccine at all, but I'm saying you need people to make a good decision, the best decision for themselves. But not, people aren't really capable of doing that. They want a binary choice. They want to know this is right and this is and that's wrong. Life isn't that way. But we also need a growth mindset. We need to understand that we're going to be in we're living in a state of perpetual uncertainty. We're going to have to make mistakes. People are going to have to take chances. You can't wait until the magic solution is somebody's going to wave a wand and it's going to fix it. So you have to have people that are continuously learning. And in order to continuously learn, we're going to continuously make mistakes. You learn from those mistakes. So how do we maintain quality, but allow some mistakes in there? And then the final one is unlearning. So you can have grit, resilience. You can have a great mind. You have a good positive attitude about the future. But if you don't unlearn, if you don't have this ability to unlearn all behaviors that aren't working, it all goes for naught. So we talk about adaptability being those five questions, or those five skills. And fortunately, they're uniquely human skills, and we can all you know, we can learn them. So it goes back to education and reskilling. Sometimes it's not teaching people in order to get people to adopt new skills or even to have the motivation or initiative to get reskilled and upskill. They need to have adaptability skills. Otherwise, you're just pushing jello up, you know, you're pushing water up a hill.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, to move up, you've got to be able to adapt, haven't you? That's what always comes with experience. It's being able to adapt your approach, isn't it? And to look at things in a different way. Because there's always more to learn, isn't there? There's always more to learn. And even if you reach the top of a company, I had a guest on a while ago, but he was talking about reverse mentoring, where you have younger people in the business and maybe they just have a different lens on things. They're not quite as experienced as you, but they've probably got different, maybe more digital skills, and you go in and actually get mentored by them instead of just this more senior staff doing the mentoring, which I thought was quite an interesting take on it.
I love Hank. I mean, I look toward people that have the skills that they're comfortable with or have different experiences, but that also requires that I have the ability to unlearn old ways. That just seem contradictory. It doesn't make sense, or I don't like doing it, and so yeah, you're absolutely. I mean, reverse mentoring. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. Reverse mentoring has certainly been recommended, and it's you know, and organizations have done it well, and it's been an excellent experience. But if reverse mentoring only works if the senior person, the more experienced person, who's being mentored in that case, is willing to unlearn their old behaviors. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of, oh, now I understand, I see the world that you see, but I'm not going to change because I've been doing it this way for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah. That's hard.
You get better educated, but not any different or better.
Yeah. And do you think a big thing there that would come in as well is ego, isn't it? I mean, once you reach a certain level, there's a certain kind of sense of, well, I've been there and I've done it, or, well, I'm the boss. And then you've really got to kind of just remove all of that, haven't you, to be open to opening yourself up to someone that isn't quite as experienced as you.
Good luck with that. I mean, you asked earlier on what happens to these organizations that don't adapt, you know, or don't accept, you know, don't change their ways. And the answer is good luck with that. I mean, and you're already seeing it. There are so many businesses that are just on the edge. They can't find staff. They can't open. They're shutting down earlier. You know, we're in the heat of summer here, and amusement parks, this is their big season. I mean, this is it. And amusement parks in the U.S., some of the biggest ones, are closed down 2 days a week because they can't find staff. They don't have all the rides open. They don't have the refreshment stands open because they can't find staffing to be able to do it. And that's certainly a, you know, that's in the entertainment side, but the same thing's going on. They don't have people to mow and clean the cemeteries. You know, people are doing that, whether it's retail, restaurants, manufacturing, distribution, you know, healthcare. There's shortages all over the place, and people are cutting back, or businesses are cutting back. And some businesses didn't really have that much margin. They didn't have that much profit. They eked out a living before. You can't afford, you know, one is run a smarter operation, but you got to be open. You need to be open to have customers. And if you're not open, then it's going to be challenging. I heard one, I too have a podcast, and we interviewed an economist in a very similar way that question was asked.
Okay.
And they just said that there's going to be an extraordinary amount of, and again, speaking for the U.S., extraordinary amount of bankruptcies in 12 months, because once all the government stimulus goes away, these companies are going to have to do it on their own.
Yeah.
And you're going to have rising wages, less open hours, you know, unless you were making a big profit before. If you were just eking out a living, I'm not sure how those companies will make it. And then throw a bad attitude on top of it.
It's not a difficult moment, is it, for a lot of companies? And yeah, they might have got through the pandemic, but like you mentioned, if they don't adapt and change the ways of working, and now things are starting to reopen, it's going to be quite a difficult future, isn't it?
The good news about that, I mean, it sounds like this is dystopian, and we're all, you know, going down the tubes. I remain optimistic. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so much opportunity out there. There is so much business to be had. The number of last year during a pandemic, yep. there were more new businesses started in the U.S. than there was in the 2 years prior to that. Mm-hmm. So there people are starting new businesses. There's new opportunity. They're doing business in different ways. There's new jobs. There's new skills. So, if people would get out of their own way and not defend that the way I've been doing it is the right way mm-hmm. and is the only way, if people get out of the way, there is a tremendous amount of opportunity. I mean, just look at the economy. I mean, our economy is just booming. Mm. I mean, it's crazy. It's just booming. And it's being held back by the lack of people. People don't, of labor shortages. And it's completely, there was a big article the other day, our Federal Reserve, which, controls the money flow. Mm-hmm. They're completely baffled because the numbers are how do you have high unemployment with so many job openings and not enough people filling them? There's a whole mix of things going on. So it's gonna be challenging, and we're living, in this era of Googleization, of what I call perpetual, it's an era of perpetual uncertainty.
Yeah. Like you said, I mean, the barriers to entry now and actually starting a company, scaling it's a different matter, but starting a company is it's one of the best times, isn't it, at the moment to get started. And like you mm-hmm. mentioned, you just got to get out of your own way. Taking that first step's usually the most difficult.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
And so we got onto the future a bit here, Ira. What do you think we'll be talking about in the summer of 2022, 12 months from now?
Much of the same thing. Mm-hmm. we're still going to be talking labor shortages.
Yeah.
Hopefully there will be some improvement or at least some good initiatives. U.S. Economies, mm-hmm. the economists are predicting there's going to be a little bit of a dip in the economy at the end of this year, beginning of next year. But through the end of 2023, we're going to see very, very rapid growth. Mm-hmm. There are still, countries, the U.K. is still trying to come out of this. A lot of the countries in Europe are doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. Certainly the Asian economy seems to be, on the rebound.
Yeah.
There is, the forecast, the economic forecast is really interesting because it's just growth. So I think we're going to continue to see much of the same discussions that we have. Technology is accelerating. We're going to have a lot of, good news on that front. I think the economies are going to be booming. We're still going to have to deal with social unrest and civil mm-hmm. unrest and mm-hmm. And hopefully not another pandemic, but that we got a long way to go to get people vaccinated and, mm-hmm. and get vaccines and get that control that behavior a little bit. I think we're going to be talking about much the same thing. Hopefully it's not more intense, but that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. And following the Spanish flu, I mean, we're going back quite far now, but following the Spanish flu, there was a real boom in the 1920s. Do you think something like that might happen after the COVID pandemic? Hopefully there isn't a strong second wave and the vaccines hold strong. Yeah. But do you see that there might be a bit of a boom kind of following this?
It's already happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's already happening. I mean, mm-hmm. the continuation, again, there's people forecasting that the 20, this is the Roaring 20s. That's mm-hmm. what they called the pandemic, the Roaring 20s, that will continue. Mm-hmm. That we're going to see that through 2030.
Okay.
And again, part of the benefits, I mean, it's interesting you brought the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
Can you think, and we can even just go back 10 years, but in that mm-hmm. case, you're going back 100 years. Can you imagine what this pandemic would have been without technology? I know mm-hmm. people complain about Zoom fatigue and always being online and
which is unfair because really Zoom's carried us through this, hasn't it? And now everyone goes, oh, Zoom
imagine
is painted in a bad light.
Imagine what our lives would have been
without
technology. That, mm-hmm. Even going to a doctor, I mean, you couldn't have had a visit remote, telehealth. Mm-hmm. You would have had to go. And so there would have been many, 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 many more people that were infected, many, many more deaths. Mm-hmm. Also is for a lot of the workers who were able to work from home, if they were in essential work, to keep that, and they had to go to an office, all those people would have been exposed or completely unemployed.
Yeah.
So the technology saved us, even going back 10 years. You know, if this would have happened in 2011, it wouldn't have been functional. I mean, we're actually probably behind you in Singapore with remote technologies, but you know, we were still operating on 3G. I mean, we couldn't have, you couldn't have done Zoom. In fact, I interviewed somebody. I had a podcast in 2010.
Yeah, I think we were doing. I remember we moved to Singapore 2010, and we were doing Skype. I remember we were Skyping friends and family back home.
So I had an interview, and I found it. I was doing a search, and I didn't even know it was still listed. But and I interviewed a young entrepreneur. He was probably in his 20s or maybe early 30s at the time, and he started a company. I don't remember the name of the company, but it basically was Zoom. He said it was all timing. He talked about doing this remote, and it was during the, you know, after the Great Recession, and he talked about how they're moving to video. I think the topic was video conferencing, and that, you know, we wouldn't have to travel, we didn't have these meetings, and, you know, he said he was just ahead of his time. The technology, there just was no infrastructure to roll it out. And even if the businesses had it, the people didn't have it, you know, or your clients didn't have it. Now it was almost universal. I mean, you could Zoom in on your smartphone if you had to. So again, sometimes it's just timing. A lot of the technologies that we are using today have actually been around for 30 years. We just didn't have the bandwidth or the broadband or the adoption or the costs were too high. It's just, you know, really incredible. So that's going to continue on. And that's, so I think we're going to have a better quality of life. You know, hopefully we can figure out how to, you know, figure out climate control. That's the next, you know, that'll be our next pandemic.
Yeah.
But there's going to be waves of that. But the good thing is we're going to have a lot of smart people, a lot of technology. It's going to create a lot of businesses that will benefit from that. But we got to get out of our own way. And going back to adaptability, which is where I spend most of my day thinking, writing, researching, is how do we help people become more comfortable being uncomfortable? How do we help people become uncomfortable with change? Because the other end of the tunnel, you know, there's a lot of hope. It's very positive. But it's the distractions and the noise, you know, do worry me.
Ira, I've really, really enjoyed the conversation today, talking about the perfect labor storm with you, really unpacking what companies need to do differently and some of the things they should be looking at in terms of key skill sets for recruiting and developing staff and some of your opinions and insights on the future and the positivity and what technology's been able to do for us. So thank you so much for talking me and the listeners through everything.
Thanks for allowing me to share.
Yeah. Just to close, Ira, I always ask my guests to share one life or career lesson with the listeners.
I guess the one thing, and you know, you hear this when I was young, which was a long time ago. You know, you got to value every minute. If you want to pursue something, try it. You know, there are a lot of things and that goes back to that growth mindset that I was talking about before. You don't have to be perfect at everything. You know, you can learn from all your experiences, but don't hesitate. If you want to try something, you want to learn something, whether it's a language or programming or jumping out of a plane or playing the drums, do it.
Fantastic advice. I completely agree. So Ira, how can people get in touch if they want to find out more and feel free to plug anything here you want to plug?
Well, thanks very much. Very simply, I mean, you can Google me. So Ira S. Wolf, with an E, W-O-L-F-E. I will show up somewhere. But my website is successperformancesolutions.com. I also have a community called Googleization Nation. It's free, and you can sign up for it, and you get updates. We just released... we're planning two new webinars. One of them is about recruitment. One of them is about adaptability. And you get notices about the podcast and guests and some other things. So GoogleizationNation.com or, you know, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm very active there and happy to to share what's going on. It's probably four or five times a day I post something that I've written or read something worth sharing.
Ira, thank you so much for coming on Digital Transformation and Leadership and sharing all your insights and experience with the listeners.
Stay safe, stay well. Appreciate it very much.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review. Just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back again next week when we will again go behind the scenes with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.